The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance tonight. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise. Oh, is there a hand? Where? Hi, Ken. Welcome. Ian, welcome. Nice. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to this meeting? Welcome, Jennifer. Good to have you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is from the forward to the first edition of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person, and besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. Please welcome our panel. We have Anna from the Half Measures Group and Willie from Saturday Night Live.
Thank you.
I will read the first paragraph on page 76, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 76. Now we need more action. Without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have made a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Anna?
Hey everyone, I'm Anna. I'm a drug addict and alcoholic.
Anna.
My sobriety date is September 12, 2005. My home group is Half Measures Group in Virginia Beach, Tuesday nights at 7:30 at St. Andrew's United Methodist. Come check us out. And I am only going first because it is Willie's belly button birthday. And he asked me to. And I'm really honored to be here. And thanks for having me. And thanks, Willie, for asking me. I am excited to speak about these steps, 8 and 9. And it's hard to talk about 8 and 9 without talking about the steps that come before them a little bit. And I'm just sharing my experience, strength, and hope with these steps. If you don't like it, go complain to your sponsor about it. This was how I was taken through them and what happened for me. And this particular paragraph, faith without works is dead. I was told that the miracle of steps 6 and 7, when I go to my higher power and I've become ready, to have these character defects that I found out about in steps 4 and 5, and I go to my God and I say, here I am, here's this prayer, take the good and the bad. that the miracle of step six and seven happens in the work that's done in steps eight and nine. Hence why I can't just sit on my laurels and, chill and in readiness and willingness in step six and seven. And I gotta move, and do something about it. Otherwise, my experience was I did a fourth and fifth step, and where it says, remember it was agreed. It's funny that they remind us right around here. They're like, remember, because we're about to let you out of the house for the first time in the steps, right? You've been in the house up until this point, and now you're going to go interact with the normal people. Remember, you agreed, you did. At the very beginning, you would go to any lengths, and son of a bitch. Oh, pardon my language. I apologize. When it says we have a list of all persons we have harmed, you made that already. I did not love that I had already made this list in step four. My sponsor was like, you're not burning this thing, you're not doing a little ritual, you're keeping this thing because the same list of people that you were complaining about so much when you did your fifth step, you're gonna be let out of the house to go make some amends to the same people. I was like, what are you talking about? Because in my fifth step, what happened was it tells me I was prepared to look at this list from an entirely different angle. I learned that the people on that list, yeah, they really had dominated me, and by the end of that process, my fifth step with my sponsor, yeah, I mean, it really had my number when it says I swallowed some large chunks of truth about myself. That fourth column, I mean, my sponsor, we she sat on the back porch. She was like knitting during my fifth step. She looked very bored, And it kind of sped up as I went because I started to see like it was the same thing over and over and over and over again, And then I had that back page stuff that got real dark and real serious, and I did. I got a lot of freedom from doing that fifth step. But then I sat on my laurels with six and seven. I chilled there for a year. I highly don't recommend that. I didn't like step seven, where it talks about that prayer, and when I got in enough pain, it was like, Cooper, get off the pot and try not to curse. So hence coming into step eight and nine with this particular paragraph, once I finally hit that point of like insanity and sobriety, I was willing, and my sponsor and I sat down at her kitchen table and went through this list and the willingness of like, I can't keep feeling insane in sobriety. I could not afford it because I realized that if I did not keep moving forward in action, that I was gonna drink and die. That was very clear. It's very uncomfortable to be just not drinking and not doing anything and just going to meetings. And that was my experience. So realizing going out to my fellows and repairing the damage done in the past wasn't just about me getting relief, though. It really had to be from an attitude of making things right. That I had been living on self-will, running the show myself for a long time from my point of view, my perspective of needing to be right. And I had heard a lot of people. I'll shut up with that because there's other readings I want to hear Willie's take on this. So over to you.
I use my real name since it's my birthday, and all. My name's Thomas Galloway. I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, Thomas, next.
Yeah, don't call me that. Everyone's called me Willie since I was born, so I probably won't answer. My sobriety date's 9/1/17. My birthday's January 5th, a long time before that. My home group's Saturday night special in Centerville. We meet at 7. It's as Bill sees it meeting. Don't really care for the format, but I love my home group. I love the people in it. I love what we do together. It's part of what kept me sober early on. I used to go to that meeting, just sit in the back and wait for them all to get done talking so I could pick the chairs up, and that would screw up like another 30 minutes of me trying to never drink again. I just kind of like grew into the group and fell into it. But in this paragraph, it says, we made a list of all persons. We had it when we made our inventory. I did not know that happened. I got snookered. And I like that Anna said that, I'm probably going to talk about previous steps a lot tonight because they kind of all work together after you've been here for a second. But that faith without works is dead. heard this old guy, one of them old crusty guys from Craddock, say early on, I'm looking up definitions to every word I see, like definition of the, definition of a, definition of faith that says total trust in someone or something. Total's pretty scary. Ain't a whole lot of wiggle room in the word total. This guy used to say, if you're praying for potatoes, you better get a shovel and get your ass in the garden. What does he mean by that? And it's basically like that, faith without works is dead, I can sit around and wait for God to render me white as snow and give me all my stuff back and take this drink away from me, but if I'm not being an active participant in my sobriety, it's probably not going to last too long. But in this, we had it when we made our inventory. If you go back to, I think it's on 65, they show the columns and stuff. That was easy as hell to do. Because at that point, it was the five words that kept me drinking a long time. It was them and they and woulda, coulda, shoulda. And all I had to do was just write that down with specific names by it. And then I go to the second column and then the third, and it's like, look what they did to me. Like I will definitely read this to someone because you're going to tell me I deserve to drink. But then you turn the page, I didn't see it coming. And I was told to, in those three columns, I was told to number them all when I was done with that part. And then I was told to get out this different piece of paper and you turn the page and it says something, this paraphrase, it says like, setting aside the wrongs that others had done to us entirely. Where was I to blame and what could I have done different? And I like that. What could I have done different? Because, I have an ex-wife and she made that list a lot. And, it's like, what could I have done wrong? And, at that point, I was like, I didn't do anything. I did everything for that woman. I did this, I did that. I did everything for the kids and while she was getting her master's degree. And I did this, and, like a lot of hate, if you want to call it that, or discontent or whatever. But then they said, what could you have done different? I'm like, well, at the end of my marriage, I really wasn't giving her the attention she deserved, and I was paying a lot of attention to people paying attention to her, and then I was taking that out on her. She told me, like, when we first moved in our first house, she's like, I love doing yard work. I was like, have at it. I hate it. And then, there were times it was, she'd be like, can you cut the yard? And I'd be like, well, I thought you loved doing that stuff. And then I started noticing that if I cut it, she would bring me a beer. So like I tried to do that once in a while. But I started saying stuff like, well, I guess I could have done more yard work. I could have helped out around the house. And then all of a sudden I start seeing what I did do wrong. But my sponsor said, oh, so you weren't cutting the yard when you should have. Like, that's wrong, right? You weren't paying attention to her. That's harm, right? But I'm writing this down on a separate piece of paper, right? With numbers. I'm looking here. Number, number. And we get, and like six the first time, like we're entirely ready to have God remove all my defects of character. Like, yeah, I'm gung ho. Get rid of that stuff. Because in my mind, I got all my stuff back. That's the white as snow. Get my stuff back. Said the prayer. I'm ready to go. And then we get to, like, how did I make a list when I did my inventory? Never saw this coming. He's like, you still have it, right? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, pull that first page out. And you pull it out. And you look at it for a second. You start getting mad again because you see all the crap they did to you. He said, now take that other piece of paper and cover up the second and third column with it. And that looked different. Because it looked like, ex-wife, what I did. Eight brothers and sisters, so I had a long line of them. Go through the list, like Jerry, what I did, Jimbo, what I did, Mike, what I. And then I could see the harms. I love eight and nine because when I was a kid, there used to be this TV show called Quantum Leap, where this Dr. Sam Beckett made this time machine and he jumped back into other people's bodies and he righted the wrongs from the past. And like This gives us a chance to do that. I might start crying here in a minute. So anyways, so there were, I like the, became willing to make amends to them all step eight, you know, because I was not gung-ho to go running out and admit my wrongs. Even after getting to this point and seeing them, I still had, you know, certain brother, best man at my wedding, I still had to screw him. He turned his back. Like I had that attitude, right? And like become willing, like I am going to cry probably, and I'll tell you why here in a little bit. I'm going to stop there because I think if I start talking now, I'm going to like talk two paragraphs ahead.
All right.
Okay.
We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Sidebar. Adult supervision is highly recommended. So, with my list, I mean, I ran all of my amends by my sponsor of the timing and who and how, et cetera. Because some of my good ideas of like, yeah, I should really, she's like, no, don't do that. That's a terrible idea. With some of my amends, and just to Willie's point, there were some that I was, had some trepidation about, fear, some resentment, more prayer. Some of the quote unquote easy ones proved not to be so easy, and vice versa. Some of them, my sponsor Jeannie was like, you do not need to go preaching your spiritual blah, blah, as it says in this paragraph. What's not useful, thinking about what the real purpose is, I've said in the step seven prayer, I'm asking my higher power, remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And that's what it's saying here. If I'm repairing the damage done, perhaps there's a future opportunity to have a relationship with this person and to be useful to them, to be of service. If I'm looking at, what damaged the relationship in the first place, and I can look square in the face and admit, when I was drinking and using, and even when I wasn't, just my behavior in general with untreated alcoholism, manipulative. I used people like tissues, just shamelessly with zero feeling. I killed every moral I ever had. And at the end, especially that last couple of years, I felt nothing, and it scared me. I mean, I thought I was like literally dead inside by the time I got here, just scooped out like I had no soul left. You stood in my way. I did not care. I'd walk right over you. I mean, the dishonesty, and just, and I literally scared myself with just how, so when I looked at some of those amends, I could be very cruel. I could be very brutal. And I was like, I don't think some of these people are going to want to see or talk to me. And I had this one amends in particular with someone I had really who was an enabler, and I manipulated and used that to my advantage, who'd been a wonderful friend to me, and I just milked that dry. And I sat down across the table from her, and I knew she was not going to want to hear about Anna's reforms, you know. And I've been a chronic relapser. You know, a lot of people knew that Anna had bounced around programs in and out for years. They didn't want to hear that, ooh, Anna was sober again. And, you know, they had heard that. They had seen me wave around 30-day chips. You know, I'm sober now. And I even used that other times that I was sober to get mine, you know, give me some money, you know, let me stay at your house. I couch surfed a lot. I was homeless multiple times. And so people lost faith in my declarations of, you know, goodwill. So my sponsor had me wait a while to make amends. That living amends was a big deal, you know, so where it says more interested in a demonstration of goodwill, than in my talk of, they didn't want to hear me just talk. What am I going to do? What is my actions going to show? How am I going to show up? And so I sat across the table from this girl, and Jeannie was like, call it what it is. Say exactly what you did and do not sugarcoat it. And I sat there and said, I was manipulative. I used you. I took advantage, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, what else did I leave out or miss? You know, and she said, well, let me tell you. And I listened and I nodded my head and I said, you're right. You know, and she went on for like an hour of you and this one time and blah, blah, blah. And you know, and I needed to listen. And I said, you're absolutely right. What can I do to make it right? And I told her, my sorry is not enough. I'm not here to say I'm sorry. I'm here to make an amends, to change my behavior. If there's anything I can do moving forward, and to become a good friend to you. And the opportunities have presented themselves to show up for her. And so that's the deal. Not just having a one-time conversation, but to become consistent. And you know, that living amends, and I'll talk about this later with my family, you know, is the point of this step, because if I'm asking my higher power to remove the character defect, I'm making room for a spiritual principle to live according to that instead. I'll give it to Willie.
Yes. Well, I didn't know if a spotlight was coming on for it. What the...
It's a BS detector.
Oh, right.
I am full of it. Thank
Probably
you.
a sensor. Maybe not a protector. It might be a sensor. Like he's getting ready to try to baffle you with some bullshit.
It's like anchors.
So our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be maximum service to God and those about us. That suggests that I'm not fit to do that yet. You know, they suggest a lot of stuff in this book. You know, we're not supposed to lead on a spiritual basis. I was told to, when I go to these demands, tell them what I am, why I'm doing this, and that I may not be or get well unless I do it, and let the outcome come what it is. Don't. And I remember my son, you know, I was, you know, probably finalized divorce 8 months when I got sober. And then about 3 or 4 months in here, after I started paying attention and I started learning some things and learning about like mental obsessions and allergies and stuff, like I was excited because to me that sounded like it really wasn't my fault again. Like I can't help it. I have this obsession, and then if I do, you know, like God, why are you guys mad at me? I didn't. This wasn't on purpose. Yeah. But when I would hear something, like I would call my son, and I'd be talking, and I remember I was probably 4.5, 5 months sober, and I called him up, and I don't know if he was having a bad day or if he was just actually tired of my shit, but he cut me off and said, we are tired of hearing about your effing alcoholism. Quit calling here and telling us about it. You know, let us alone. You know, don't call me anymore. And eventually God took care of that. So, but to fit ourselves to be maximum service to God and those about us, like my son motocrosses, you know, we do a lot of traveling. Like he's my best friend, right? About 3 years ago, he had taken a younger friend of his out, and they went up to West Point, motocross, big community. But they were staying there, and they were going to ride at this kid's private track for a while. Well, the young kid put something stupid on social media and his mom saw it. So she called my son at like 2 in the morning. You need to get him home. They're in West Point. The kid's from Elizabeth City. It's 2 in the morning. And he's telling me about this the next day. And he's like, I loaded him up and I drove back and met him halfway. And then I drove back up to West Point and this and that. And I was like, I'm listening. I start bitching at him, I'd have told them to go F off, this and that. And I start yelling at him, like, don't you ever do that again. That's unsafe for you. And because he was in about 18 and he'd been driving about a year. So I think I was thinking of safety. But I start like telling him, don't ever do this again. And he cut me off and he said, the dad, I guess the mom was the one who called. The dad was in the background. He said, and I won't say his name, but he's like, shut up. He said, the dad was acting like you used to, and I didn't want to deal with it. And I was like, whoa. Like this after 5 pretty good years with this boy. And so, I mean, to fit myself where Anna said, is there anything else, Like my son was pretty happy to have his dad back for a while at first, like we're doing these things. But when I ask, is there anything else? That doesn't mean they're going to say it right away. They may come back 5 and a half years later. And it hit me. And I think, and this is where I have learned to pause and say, please help, speak through me, whatever, the quickest prayer I can spit out in my head. And somehow the words, do you need to talk about that, came out of my mouth. And he was like, no, I just don't want you to ever act like that again. I said, okay. A lot, I'm one of those people I kind of agree with, if you're practicing these principles in all your affairs, there's no such thing as a living amendment. Rule when they say something like that. Like I have to do my best not to be that person today. And in that, I'm not to mention God or anything spiritual when I go to make these amends. I'm supposed to trust God at this point. I'm supposed to pause and pray before I enter any one of them, even if I just prayed with a sponsor and I'm headed right there. I was taught to sit in my car for a second and pause, say a little prayer, most of which is speak through me if I am to speak. Amy has a really pretty way of saying it when you're in the hallway, but that's like my short version of what she says to me. Like I need help. Like I'm powerless over a whole lot more than alcohol in my life. I'm pretty powerless over what goes through my head most of the times. But when I'm doing my best to trust God and to do the work that I feel has been set before me or not, sometimes God tells me, the right thing to do is nothing at all here. My life seems to go a whole lot better when I'm doing this stuff. I do know that. I may be getting way off topic here. I know my brother, my next oldest brother, big family, 9 of us, was the best man in my wedding. About 2 years before I got sober, right when I was getting separated, he called me up and he's pretty Bible pounderish. And he called up and sending me to hell or something like that. And I called him a self-righteous son of a and hung the phone up. Do you know he wouldn't talk to me after that? Bastard. And I was drinking, drunk, and I got up in the morning, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that. And I tried to call him and he wouldn't answer. And then for 6 years, I'd text him on his birthday, happy birthday, no answer. Merry Christmas, no answer. He lives in Louisiana. There was a hurricane coming through there. And I was probably 3 and a half years sober. And I just text him, hey, I'm praying for you. Are you okay? And the only words I heard in a six and a half year period were, it missed us. Not we're okay, not any. And I text back, that's great, this and that, nothing. So fast forward to, Christmas 4 years ago, a couple week, a week before Christmas, which is pretty ironic that it was, time, day, whatever. But I was talking to my brother in Gloucester, and we're just talking, blah, blah, blah. And I heard my phone beep, and I looked, and it was my brother's phone number. And I said, and you'll never meet him, so I'm going to say his name. I said, hey, Lance is calling me. My brother in Gloucester said, you better take that click. I was like, oh, shit. I'm looking at his number, and I said, please help me. I answered the phone, and I said, hello. And he said, they said you changed. I'm assuming they is the other seven brothers and sisters. And I was like, okay. Well, I didn't say okay. I'm like, okay, man. But I was like, I missed you. And then he tells me about this dream he had where God came to him and he needed to call me and make sure I know him. And I felt it well up in me. And I was getting ready to say, that's the same self-righteous. And I went, I was very sick. And I don't know where those words came from. I said, but I think I'm getting a little better now. And in that conversation, like 6.5 years of animosity were gone. Like it was like that period never happened. And I think that's where they fit ourselves to be, because I don't like all these amends that like I want, like I wanted my brother back. He's, best man at my wedding, best friend. Like I wanted that back. He didn't see it that way. He didn't see me put a drink down, everything's better. He saw it as in, I'm going to need a little proof before I even try this. And, since then, it's like that never happened in our relationship. It's almost better than it ever was. Here I go. I'm going to cry again because I'm probably getting to something else here in a little bit. So I'm going to stop there. And if I'm getting way off topic, y'all just come up, slap me or something, Anna tap me on the shoulder. But there's a lot more here we're going to read, so I'll stop.
All right, we're going to pick up on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. No, it's a separate reading.
Oh, it is. Okay.
I'm going to read the note.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. I'm going to get emotional over this. I'm going to talk about my family real quick. Someone last week, because we did step eight and nine last week, were like, oh, the family, they were easy. I was like, what are you talking
Yeah, no
about?
shit.
They were the hardest ones for me. That was my experience. It talks about enemies. When I got sober, like for real, there was no relationship with my family whatsoever at all. I am forever grateful. My sponsor and I talk about this. When I got sober, I needed to be physically separated from drugs and alcohol, and my family drove me to the halfway house where I got sober. I lived for 8 months. And the fact that they were even willing to do that is incredible. And they're like, good luck, kid. And this is true. I had a hefty bag, like a black hefty bag of me and my stuff. They disowned me. I was not welcome. I was not welcome at home. They did not take my phone calls. They had changed the locks, and they were genuinely afraid of me and for their lives. I had, and this was something I had to look at, and I had great shame over. I had threatened my mother's life in a drug-induced craze. I had slammed her against the wall, broken a vase, taken the shard of glass, and threatened to slit her throat. So, certainly don't blame them for that. And so guys should ask what I do for work. Okay. Some do know. And I had been an absolute terrorist. I was a monster. My parents were very religious. My mom was convinced and told me that I was possessed by a demon. But I blame them. I came from a very verbally and emotionally abusive household. My growing up, my home was a battlefield. And I was the resentment, the hate, from when I was little, watching my, dad chase my mom around with a baseball bat and choke her out on the bed and throw her against the wall, and I pointed my finger at them and I told them, I am this way because you made me this way, so when I became the abuser and I had to look at that on a four step, when I got big enough, I didn't, it was very hard for me to look at that. That I became, I took anger and made that my weapon. I caused great harm, in my household. And, this amends process is incredible. I'm adopted. My mom at one point was like, I rue the day that we ever adopted you. And I mean, I hate you, you hate me, we hate each other was freely said. So when, like I said, they were willing to drive me back to treatment, goodbye. And talking to my sponsor was like, how do I even begin, an amends process, as months went on and I was, working my little 725 sheet metal factory job up in the mountains of Pennsylvania, the time came where my sponsor said, this is what you're going to do. You are going to make a phone call once a week. They did not answer for a long time. You're going to leave a message and you're going to say, hey, I am calling to see how you are doing. One day they might pick up. And when they do, you're going to say, how are you doing? You're going to shut up and you are going to listen. And if they ask how you're doing, you're going to say, I'm great. You're not going to verbally vomit anything. And you're going to tell them you love them. And that's it. Just listen. And she got me right into you are going to strive to understand rather than be understood. And I was on step one at the time. She's like, you're getting into living amends immediately. And my father had sent me this letter sometime in my first month or so about how they had buried me a long time ago and they were just waiting for the phone call. And that was the first unselfish thought I think I had had in years. And I kept that. I still have it. I read it every anniversary to remind me, because something clicked. And I think my higher power, And so when I look at this question of how to approach the man we hated will arise, by the time I got to this step, I had been making that weekly phone call, like officially got to this step for a long time. And they did not, they were far from trusting me. And the conversations were real short. And they were very guarded. So by the time I formally sat down and had a conversation with them, and there were things that had happened. I had to really put out of my mind things that had happened on their side of the street. But something Willie said made me really emotional. When I reached for the anger and the resentment, it was not there. And that was not me. I can say I'm just celebrated 20 years sober. I have the most beautiful relationship with my family today. As a result of this process, going to them in a helpful and forgiving spirit, my job is to show up and be present. I missed everything. I never showed up for anything. And once after the phone calls, it was start showing up for stuff. Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthdays, Christmas, Thanksgiving. Do they need something? You show up. You don't ask for anything. You ask how you can be of service. And it changed something in me. They didn't change. I changed over a long period of time. And when I had 5 years sober, I got a card from my mother that said, "Happy 5 years." They tell me they love me today. They say that they're proud of me. It was my mom's birthday a couple of days ago. I took her to the Norfolk Botanical Gardens to see the lights. This is the same woman who said she hated me, who threw cans of green beans at my head, when I was a kid. Who is this family? Who am I? Unreal. Enemies hate it, and we don't talk about that time. It's up, they don't want to. I respect that. But I made those amends. My mom cried. My dad doesn't want to talk about it. That's okay. It's the demonstration. It's that helpful and forgiving spirit. And I'm going to say this. There's something it says. I have to look at this. It says, this is in step five. This vital step was also the means by which we began to get the feeling that we could be forgiven. No matter what we had thought or done, often it was while working the step with our sponsors or spiritual advisors that we first felt truly able to forgive others, no matter how deeply we felt they had wronged us. Our moral inventory persuaded us that all around forgiveness was desirable, but it was only when we resolutely tackled step five, which the miracle I think of that happens really in eight and nine, that we inwardly knew we'd be able to receive forgiveness and give it too. And that's when I did step nine in this living amends is when that forgiveness for me that I could forgive myself really happens. Turn it over to Willie.
Thanks, Anna. You can get me all emotional too. So, it says, sometimes it's tougher to approach enemies, tougher to approach enemies. Like a lot of guys, we're writing this list down and it has a whole bunch of ex-girlfriends on it, right? It's the first ones we want to do. I had some of them before I was married, and I was, like Anna said, it was just flat out, straight up used them. And I was told, you will not approach them directly. They know you're sorry. I was like, that kind of hurt. They didn't mean apologetically sorry either. They just know you're sorry. And he said, but believe it or not, you will get to make amends for that, and you won't even know you did it one day. And I was like, what the hell? Like they're talking like, this is some Buddha shit or something that coming to me. I didn't know what he meant. But a couple years ago, there was this woman in the program. She was married, and I knew her husband. And I talked to them both. We were all friends. And there were times like fight break out, I would talk to him, or fight break out, I'd talk to her. And it was like just a happy relationship, right? And I get this phone call one night, and it's like, I had to leave of this and that, and I'm just staying down at the beach. Can you just come down and talk to me? And I was like, okay. So let the husband know I'm going to go talk to your wife. And he's like, okay. So I drive down to Virginia Beach to the hotel. I go up there and I open the door, and what I thought was going to be like a 12th step, be there for someone, like carry this message, be there, practice these principles type step. Open the door and she was drunk, and it immediately became step six and seven, trying to avoid 13. Like somewhere I'm like, take any bit of selfishness away now, please. And I was there, and I listened and comforted, did what I did, just was little sober Willie, here, cry right here. And I left, and I called my sponsor at the time, and I was telling him, and he was like, that's how you partly made amends up to those other women. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And he's like, remember all those women I told you weren't even allowed to look at anymore? He's like, you just made amends to a few of them. And I was like, wow, God's pretty weird. Because I love at the end of ABC, the ABCs of how it works. Because the last one says, it tells me all the stuff that can't relieve my alcoholism, but it says, God could and would if he were sought. And I looked that definition up because I'm like, what the hell saw it? And it said past tense of seek. So most of the time, I have to have faith and do the works, and then I have to look back on it and see when God was involved. Like, I love that part of my life today. And I'm probably just going to say this now and get crying over with. Like, I had no idea I was speaking up here this week. I came last week and I hadn't seen Amy in a while, and she came up and gave me a hug. And she's like, "Oh, I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks. How are you doing?" And I said, "Well, you want to speak on 8 and 9 next week?" And I was like, "Not really." And she was like, "Well, you can bring whoever you want." I said, "Give me a second." And right then, Anna walked in, and I was like, "That would be awesome." Because I love hearing Anna talk. Now she's talking right in my ear, so it's even better. But, it was just all this stuff. And I went to Amy, I said, "Anna and I'll do it next week." And she said, "Great, great." So I get up this morning and I go to work. And we only work 2.5 days the week of Christmas and 3 days last week. Now I'm going back on my birthday and I have to work a whole week and speak of simple actions and all this. And I get there and about 10 after 8, my phone starts ringing. It was my oldest sister. I was like, "I'll call her at lunch." And then I just traded my car in. So then my brother that sells cars called next. I'm like, "He's going to bitch about the car I turned in. I ain't talking to him yet. He can tell me happy birthday in a text, whatever." But then my brother from Gloucester called. And I was like, he's never called to tell me happy birthday in his life. And I answered it, and my oldest brother has been in the hospital for about a month. He had some teeth pulled. Got long story, took him to the hospital. They didn't say that, think that was a big deal. They life flight him to UPJ a couple weeks ago. Ends up getting a staph infection in his bloodstream. He's doing this to his kidneys. They're putting him on dialysis three or four times a week. And I'll get to the amends part here in a second. But apparently he had two heart attacks and they couldn't bring him back yesterday. On the top of my amends list, it said mom. Like, and my first sponsor knew my mom. And I could never make amends to her. And he said, "Your mom is watching you." He said, "Why don't you treat everyone you encounter on a day-to-day basis as if you're making amends to your moms, and that'll probably work." And then the last time I saw my brother, we were racing in Pennsylvania, and I just drove up and saw my oldest brother and sister, and I was talking about my car. We're just standing there talking, and like I never really did any like harm to him directly, but when he would be at my mom's house playing cards, and I would call up about half drunk, and I wouldn't talk to my mom, and she'd put me on speakerphone. I didn't want to talk to him all; I just want to talk to him. And she would say something like horrible, like, "Have you been drinking?" And I would get mad and hang up. He saw the harm I was doing to my mom, so I said something about, "I'm sorry that I put you through that." And he said the words, "I don't even want to hear that. As long as you keep doing what you're doing, we'll call it even." It's almost like God knew I'd have to sit up here and talk tonight. Because he knew that was going to happen last night. And plus, he said that shit, so now I gotta keep doing this till I die, because if not, then the amends don't count. I know, right? But it's almost like God could see that in making that amends, I could sit up here and talk about it with the perfect person to sit beside me, and I would be okay through it all. On my birthday to boot, you know? That's some pretty cool shit when you just stop and look for it. I don't know if that's had anything to do with that page, other than the enemies and the women, but you know, my point to all that is you will get to make amends you didn't even know you made eventually. If you just do what this damn book says. Pretty cool stuff. Thanks.
All right, we're going to complete the reading tonight on page 77. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. You'll have a few minutes each to finish it out.
Okay. I just want to touch on a couple of amends that are related to this, perhaps. There are a couple of amends I was terrified to make that had to do with some traumatic things that had happened. And, I had to really just focus on the damage that I had done. When I approached these particular amends, a friend of mine and her mom, they didn't remember. I had built it up in my mind. I was like, oh my God, the shame, And having that conversation, there had been all this tension and whatnot. This paragraph, what it's talking about, I mean, it just melted away. And they were just like, oh, she's just like, I'm just so proud of you and what you're doing. And I know we didn't get to this reading, but I had a significant financial amends that I needed to make. And my sponsor, we had a lot of discussion about that. Little checks. I mean, I was barely making any money, but it was like, it was like a just around my neck. And it took a long time. And that's a whole long story for another day. But let me tell you, when I made that last check, I think it was like 2, 3 years later, the freedom I felt in that. And there's a lot of higher power stuff in that. But the person I made that financial amends to ended up getting sober, and was able to use that money to make a fresh start. And I didn't know that until years later. And it was just one of those, like, oh my God, if I hadn't made that financial amends, and the amends, the money that I stole, I ripped this person off for, actually saved my life. I came in here with an actual price, a bounty on my head, so I robbed someone to pay it off. So I felt very obligated to pay that off. And there was an amends in there that I really wanted to make. It was a fiance that dumped me, and the amends was to leave him alone. Stop apologizing. Stop trying to wiggle your way into his life. Leave him alone. Pray for him to have everything he wants. And then the last thing I'll say, and this was significant to me, and it probably 12 years in my sobriety. When I made amends to my father, there was something that had happened, and there was like a great hurt. It wasn't a resentment, it was just a great hurt in a way that he, I wanted my dad to show up for me in a certain way, and he simply hadn't. And it was just this, and my sponsor's like, you make your amends and you do not address that. And and your higher power will show up for you, but you cannot expect someone to be capable of something that they're not capable of doing. of that love or acceptance or whatever, and you need to allow your higher power to heal that and make your amends anyway. And years later, just some of the old timer men, very appropriate, whatever, in this program. I was speaking once in Noonan, Georgia, because I was living down there. And a really good fr I joke that some of my greatest friends are over the age of 70. And one of my friends, Drew, came up to me after the meeting and just shared something with me. And it just spoke to that hurt in my heart like a father figure to me. And what I found is, like, in AA and the connection with you all, my higher power has made right a lot of the things that were on that list, and giving it to him, the universe, he, she, it, whatever. And I'll pass it to Willie.
Thank you. I'm gonna try to be quick for once.
You have to
But
be.
I
It's
know I
been
will real
multiple
quick, I
steps.
promise. So it says we're never to approach anyone and criticize them. When I got here, like I went ahead and threw myself in the accelerated program, like first week, right? That's 1, 9, and 12. And I went to a bunch of people and said, I'm an alcoholic and I'm sorry, and now here's what's wrong with you. And I wondered why they didn't love me. Yeah. If you're wondering if the steps have to be done in order, if you look at them, they actually have numbers in front of them. And they're meant to be counted like you count your fingers and toes. I know when I finally did that, God took care of a whole lot more than I ever could have trying to do it my way. He presents opportunities to me to make amends that I never even see coming today. I'm sure while I'm in Pennsylvania, because a lot of my amends happen in Pennsylvania, while I'm up there this weekend coming up, I'm sure one or two will pop up and I won't even see it coming. And I have faith that God's going to carry me through it. And like, I don't need to look for something to gain or get out of doing it. But God usually takes care of the outcome and it's usually better than the way I ever perceived it just by doing what this book says. So thanks.
Thank you. All right, we're going to pass the basket in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? James.
I am James, an alcoholic.
Nope.
Hey, James.
And this home group, my home group, we're working our way. It sounds like a long way off, but actually, it's only 4 weeks old. We're going to be having dinner and a speaker after we finish the steps. Monday, February 9th, potluck in this room at 6 o'clock. Speaker at 7, we got Connie B. from Richmond, Virginia, coming down to speak. If you've never been to one of these before here, excellent crowd. Usually anywhere 100, 125, whatever, big crowd. And these nice little baby blue pamphlets, there's a whole stack of them over there. Pick some up, take them to your home group, pass them out, give them to your friend. Being sent you by a Christmas card, stick it in a Christmas card.
I told you.
Love that. Right, get on the street. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nope. Randy.
Indian alcoholic.
Hey, Randy.
Randy.
This coming Thursday at Rainbow Gardens, one of our friends is going to be speaking for Jeannie, who is celebrating 50 years of sobriety.
Oh, yeah.
That meeting starts at 8 o'clock, Roosevelt Gardens, this Thursday.
The speaker is David F. The celebrant is Dale. And we will we would love for everyone to come.
Also, if you didn't know, Jeannie, that was picking up 50 years, passed away this morning. So her 50 years was yesterday, and we will be celebrating her tomorrow, or Thursday also.
Anybody else? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're a little bit shy, you can send us an email at info@simpleactions.net. We will get back to you. Literature is available on the table to my right. Everything is free. If you need a big book, please come talk to one of us. If you can't pay for it, we'll be happy to make a special deal for you. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held up Colonial Avenue at Cafe Stella. In closing, can we please thank the panel again for coming? Thanks to all who participated tonight after the Lord's Prayer. Everyone will have a chance to come up and say thank you to Anna. Wish Willie a happy birthday, whatever you want to do.
Pass the basket again.
Followed by his real name.
Yes.
David has volunteered to read the last few paragraphs on page 164.
I belong, David.
Thanks, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you, countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, we have a nice way of closing. Well, thank you. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name,
thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.
Amen.